Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore, your week in review for Saturday, July 9th. We'll start off again with Europe. After Greece's parliament approved a new austerity program, and after the European Union, European Central Bank, and International Monetary Fund, the Troika, gave its blessing and promised to dole out Greece's next tranche of $17 billion in aid so it could pay its bills the next few months. The IMF was the last to formally kick in on Friday. Even I was hoping we'd get a little break from the debt crisis until mid-August or thereabouts, but it seems that won't be the case. On Monday, Standard & Poor's put a kibosh to the Greek bond rollover plan being offered up by France, which Germany said it would go along with, as part of bailout 2 to fund Greece to the tune of $170 billion that would carry it into 2014. But S&P said, we believe that both options represent a similar restructuring, are distressed, and offer less value than the promise of the original securities under our criteria. S&P added, if either option were implemented in its current form, absent other mitigating information, we would likely view it as constituting a default. Fitch Ratings then said that if it looks like a default, we will rate it as a default, though Fitch hasn't formally said how it would judge the French scheme. S&P's comments left everyone wondering whether a rollover deal would then trigger credit default swaps, the insurance against government default. Euro politicians were in an uproar, especially given S&P's failure to see the last crisis beforehand with regards to its ratings. But as the Financial Times opined, quote, the claim that the agency is overcompensating for its spade blindness before the financial crisis is impossible to prove or refute, but it is irrelevant. Since S&P standards for defining a default date from 2009, when it made public post-crisis revision, its judgment should not come as a surprise. However, the issue of Greek debt has been marked by wishful thinking from almost everyone in the Eurozone. Governments, lenders, the European Central Bank, and even the Eurostat statistical agency, ever since the Hellenic Republic first applied for entry into the single currency. Eurozone politicians and the ECB should thank S&P for telling the truth. The official strategy of delay and obfuscation has bought time, but it is now only increasing the fear of a disorderly euro meltdown. It is time for more forthright treatment. What's ironic is that the rollover plan, whereby banks holding sovereign debt would reinvest 70% of their holdings that mature in the next 3 years into new 30-year Greek bonds, with the bonds then paying an interest rate of between 5.5% and 8%, depending on the rate of economic growth in Greece, appears to be mute, regardless of the S&P ruling. Why? The banks and insurers have been selling their Greek paper, far more than they promised Eurozone officials going back to last year, as in there is just a fraction that would technically qualify for the rollover scheme to begin with. And who now owns what the banks sold? Probably hedge funds, who are hardly the kinds of candidates for a rollover. So where does that leave Greece? Especially come late August, early September, when the $170 billion package, including leftovers from bailout 1, is to be assembled. Don't know. But one thing is for sure, Greece's economy is going to tank a further 3 to 4% this year, while tax receipts have fallen 7% the first 5 months against the target, and receipts were slated to rise 8.5% for all of 2011. The whole collection process is dysfunctional, let alone corrupt. So that's Greece. Then the other day, Moody's weighed in by downgrading Portugal to junk status. Again, Euro leaders were in an uproar. Again, the Financial Times opined, quote, the furious reaction of European policymakers to the Portugal downgrade to sub-investment grade by Moody's was unwarranted. It is true that the rationale for credit downgrades risk being self-fulfilling. Voicing the fear that something might happen can make that something more likely to happen. Such rating actions also complicate the authorities' attempts to fix the crisis. But that is mainly because those attempts consisted of little more than buying time. Reality was always going to crash that party. Investors became too optimistic or forgetful after Greece's austerity votes, as banks haggle over private sector involvement in a second bailout for Athens, and as bank shares tumble further. The further repricing of Portuguese, Greek, and Irish debt on Wednesday suggests that the markets are entering a new and even riskier phase of the crisis. The prospect of a wider restructuring of Eurozone sovereign debt is now firmly in investors' sights. That was the Financial Times. But wait, there's more. Italy's stock market tanked 9% this week, led by a fall in its bank shares, some down 20% or more, over fears Italy's big banks will receive failing grades when the ECB releases the latest stress test results next week. Spain's interest rates, amid similar fears, rose to new euro-era highs versus the German Bund. Ireland's also hit records over the week. So we're far, far from over, sports fans, when it comes to this mess. While the Eurozone desperately needs growth, the ECB went ahead and hiked interest rates over inflation fears. The key rate is now up to 1.50%. The Bank of England, though, maintained its lending rate at 0.50% because, as Governor Mervyn King put it, it's more important to keep the economy growing rather than worrying about inflation at the moment. Turning to the U.S. economy, a funny thing happened on the way to a renewal of significant job growth. After ADP's report for June showed a sizable pickup in private sector employment, 157,000 when the consensus was for an increase of 95,000, Wall Street's economists began to furiously hike their forecasts for the government's employment report on Friday. Not growth of 100,000, but 125,000, 150,000, some even said higher. ADP was a game changer, yes siree, Bob. Only it wasn't. The June report showed non-farm payrolls grew 18,000, not 100,000 or more, and the May figure was revised down from a putrid 54,000 to just 25,000. The unemployment rate, critical to President Obama's reelection, ticked up to 9.2%, the highest since December 2010. The average estimate for growth in the second quarter is 2.3%, with 3.2% the average forecast for the second half. No freaking way on the latter, and without a doubt, economists will be scrambling next week to lower their forecast. It also doesn't help that the employment report contained the news that average hourly earnings in June fell 0.1%. But there was some decent news this week. Chain store sales for June rose 6.5% when an increase of 4.9% was expected. This after the dreadful weather nationwide in May. Overall retail sales are released next week, along with inflation data and the first corporate earnings reports. The main topic of discussion next time, however, aside from potentially Italy, will be the debt ceiling and deficit reduction talks. So now we turn to Washington. This weekend is a critical one in terms of our nation's finances, as President Obama met earlier with congressional leaders and asked everyone to reconvene on Sunday at the White House. I'm not going to hazard a guess as to what the two sides may come up with, but talk of real entitlement reform could be just that, talk. For starters, Democrats, including key leaders like Nancy Pelosi, have been adamant all along that Social Security not be touched, as nonsensical as this is. But now some on both sides are talking of a new formula to compute the consumer price index that would lead to lower than currently estimated cost of living adjustments, or COLAs. And some responsible Republicans are considering eliminating tax breaks in return for lower corporate rates. For his part, President Obama still wants higher taxes on the wealthy. My own bottom line remains the same. A package of $2 trillion in debt reduction over the next 10 years won't cut it, and at some point in 2012, an event will trigger a crisis and an outright crash in the stock market. A package of $4 trillion, on the other hand, assuming it isn't totally smoke and mirrors, would be a huge positive, and send a terrific signal to the rest of the world and its investors that the United States is serious about tackling its deficit problem. U.S. stocks would rocket higher. Of this I have little doubt. It's just that I will be shocked if our political leaders reach such a compromise, which would mean big cuts in future entitlements. For Republicans, though, I totally agree with the New York Times' David Brooks. If they can get up to $4 trillion in real debt reduction and are not being asked to raise marginal tax rates, but are instead merely being asked to close loopholes and eliminate tax expenditures that are themselves distortionary, it would be, in Brooks' mind, the mother of all no-brainers. So we await the smoke signals from the White House and Capitol Hill. Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post. Here we go again, an approaching crisis, a looming deadline, nervous markets, and then, from the miasma of gridlock, rises our president, calling upon those unruly congressional children to quit squabbling, stop kicking the can down the road, and get serious about debt. This from the man who ignored the debt problem for 2 years by kicking the can to a commission, promptly ignored the commission's December 2010 report, delivered a State of the Union address in January that didn't even mention the word debt until 35 minutes in, delivered in February a budget so embarrassing it actually increased the deficit that the Democratic-controlled Senate rejected it 97-0. Took a budget mulligan with his April 13 debt plan speech, asked in Congress how this new budget framework would affect the actual federal budget. Congressional Budget Office Director Doug Elmendorf replied with a devastating, "We don't estimate speeches. You can't assign numbers to air." President Obama assailed the lesser mortals who inhabit Congress for not having seriously dealt with a problem he had not dealt with at all, then scolded Congress for being even less responsible than his own children. They apparently get their homework done on time. My compliments. Krauthammer continues, but the Republican House did do its homework. It's called a budget. It passed the House on April 15. The Democratic Senate has produced no budget, not just this year, but for 2 years running. As for the schoolmaster-in-chief, he produced two 2012 budget facsimiles. The first, February, was a farce, and the second, April, was empty, dismissed by the CBOs, nothing but words untethered to real numbers. Obama has run disastrous annual deficits of around $1.5 trillion while insisting for months on a clean debt ceiling increase, i.e., with no budget cuts at all. Yet suddenly he now rises to champion major long-term debt reduction, scorning any suggestions of a short-term debt deal as can-kicking. Krauthammer continues, Obama's other favorite debt reduction refrain is canceling an oil company tax break. Well, if you collect that oil tax and the corporate jet tax for the next 50 years, you will not yet have offset Obama's deficit spending for February 2011. After his Thursday meeting with bipartisan congressional leadership, Obama adopted yet another persona. Cynic-in-chief became compromiser-in-chief. Highly placed leaks are portraying him as heroically prepared to offer Social Security and Medicare cuts. We shall see. It's no mystery what is needed. First, entitlement reform that changes the inflation measure, introduces means testing, then syncs the lower Medicare eligibility age with Social Security's and indexes them both to longevity. And second, real tax reform, both corporate and individual, that eliminates myriad loopholes in return for lower tax rates for everyone. That's real debt reduction. Yet even now, we don't know where the president stands on any of this. Until we do, I'll follow the Elmendorf rule. We don't estimate leaks. Let's see if Obama can suspend his 2012 electioneering long enough to keep the economy from going over the debt cliff. That was Charles Krauthammer, Washington Post. Stocks rose again this week, though the gains were tempered by the after effects of Friday's jobs report. But even then, the decline in the major averages was minimal, and for the week, the Dow Jones gained 0.6% to close at 12,657, while the S&P added 0.3% and NASDAQ 1.5%. Alcoa starts off earnings season on Monday, and activity will pick up in earnest on this front by week's end. That's all for this week. I'll be back with you next Saturday for further information. Go to stocksandnews.com, click on Week in Review. Have a good one. Take care.